this green patch fades away as you move from the cold mountains of Syrge to the hot, dry Kalutz. And in the heart of the Kalutz, there is hardly any vegetation at all. But Mother Nature has created the matchless forest in the area between the Syrge Mountains and the Kalutz. This strange land formation I'm standing next to is not your simple hill. It is the world's biggest natural vase known as the Nepka. This phenomenon is called Nepka in the African Sahara, Shur Moro in the central areas of Iran, and Talagaz by those living on the eastern and southeastern plains of Iran. When sandstorms blow past the vegetation in this area, they leave behind some of the dirt and sand at the foot of these plants. When the wind blows, some of the sand and dirt is trapped in the trees and crashes to the ground, creating a mound over time. In order to survive, the trees use their long roots to absorb water and other nutrients buried underground. The dirt around the shrubs and trees contain more moisture. This relative moisture keeps the sand and earth in place around the plant. Of course, that leads to a portion of the trunk, branches, and leaves being buried, which in turn contributes to the solidification of the sand near the plant. Every natural Nepka vase is named according to the species it hosts. The Nepkas are called Talagaz or Talitar by the locals in this region. Another unique feature of Lut are these same Nepkas. They are the tallest natural vases in the world. The Nepkas of this kind have been seen in Africa too, but the ones in Africa are barely 3 meters tall. At their tallest, the Nepkas in Iran are 10 meters tall. Normally, Nepkas grow on flat surfaces. They best grow on moist land. The shape of the Nepka depends on the size, density, and growth rate of the host plant. In this Nepka forest, the dominant species is the salt cedar. My goodness, it looks more like a miracle. Just look how God instilled the hope for life in these salt cedars and saxholes. When they're just small seedlings, winds dump massive amounts of sand onto them. But driven by their strong will to live, they continue to grow in order to survive. The battle between the wind and sand on one hand and these trees on the other has been going on forever. It's been around for millions of years. But what is really very important is that hope keeps everything and everyone alive. And these trees, because of their intrinsic sense of hope, the will for life, put their roots down and stand tall. They continue to grow as a means of survival. It's going to become stormy very soon. Desert storms are very dangerous. So what you need to do is find shelter somewhere or leave that area immediately. Fortunately, I'm very close to my next destination and I think I'm not going to run into any trouble. But I have to get going immediately or I'm gonna get sand and dirt all over my body and stuff. My camera crew and I were taken off guard by the sudden change of weather and the subsequent sandstorm. One of the biggest powers of nature in a desert is the ability of sand and dust to penetrate each and every orifice during a storm. And our equipment was no exception. Sandstorms are among the biggest dangers of the desert. In some cases, such storms continue to blow for days and can cost nature travelers their lives. But there are other dangers lurking in other parts of this vast plain. Therefore, the best way to ensure a safe trip to Lut is to make the necessary arrangements with the relevant authorities in Kerman province and the city of Shahdad. From Shahdad, I had to walk around 250 kilometers to the west of the province, to a place only 15 kilometers away from Rafsanjan. Kerman is a province with limited water resources. Many of the deep wells in the province have dried up. But deep in the heart of Rafsanjan's crisis-hit nature, there is a canyon that sparkles like a diamond. You might be thinking this isn't Iran, that I'm speaking to you from another country. But you're wrong. This is our beloved Iran, and I'm now standing atop a scary deep canyon, the Raga Grand Canyon of Rafsanjan. Valleys and canyons are strange yet beautiful natural phenomena, and they become even more beautiful if their emergence is not the result of orogeny, rather if it's the result of thousands or millions of years of erosion by wind, sand, and water of flat plains. Raga Grand Canyon is one such ravine, a peerless, pristine valley in Kerman province. I was amazed at the view of the canyon from above. The pointed cones, the big and small columns carved out by erosion, the arcs, the partitions and wall-like strips were only a few of all the beautiful features of this canyon. Raga is around 20 kilometers long. Its width varies between 3 and 100 kilometers, and in some places it is around 80 meters deep. Walking on top of it could have been very dangerous. My goodness, it's really scary, but it's magnificent at the same time. At this point, I think it's around 70 meters deep from where I'm standing. If I fall into it, there will be nothing left of me. It's dangerous to be here because the earth here is very soft and can slide at any moment. So you'll have to keep a safe distance while walking along these beautiful walls. It's ruggedly beautiful indeed. You can get the most beautiful view of the canyon from up here, but every side of it offers its own unique beauty. What I'm really happy about is the fact that there is no construction work happening anywhere in a 20-kilometer radius. There are no roads. That's why this ravine has maintained its pristine status, and of course, the area around it too. My hope is that we can preserve this untouched ravine and its surroundings the way they are and leave them to the next generation, and they to the generation that comes after them, just like the way it looks now. I hope so. The canyon's geomorphology and its pristine environs made for beautiful scenery, and that had provided a good habitat for certain species of animals in and around it. This region and this gorge are so intact, they have become home to various species of birds, such as eagles that have built their nests in recesses high on the walls where they feel safe. I'm very excited and counting every minute for the walk on the bed of the canyon, but the best time to do it would be tomorrow because I don't have enough time for it today. Raga Canyon is a good destination for geologists and nature travelers venturing into the Lute. The vegetation, such as salt cedar trees in some parts of the canyon, made the canyon even more beautiful. From the bottom up, ravines look just as beautiful. I walked along much of Raga Canyon from above and captured many beautiful views of it, but it was now time to go down to the bottom of it. This part of the wall is solid. It's hard to walk on. It's very steep too, as you can see. You have to take a lot of care going down. my God, yes. At the bottom, the canyon was beautiful and scary. I kept thinking its walls were going to come crashing down any minute. Walking at the foot of those majestic walls, I felt how little and weak I was compared to the canyon and to its creator. On one hand, the beautiful long natural statues, and on the other, the tunnel-shaped arcs carved into the walls were all astonishing. Statues chiseled by gravity pulling down the dirt and pebbles on the walls of the ravine. The view down here is simply breathtaking. The huge, majestic statues carved out on the walls of the canyon have taken thousands of years to be made. As loose earth from the top of the canyon cascaded down to the bottom over the years, it created these beautiful shapes on these walls. They are stunning. Some of them look like humans and others like certain animals. This canyon is just as beautiful down on its bed as it is from above. This dry tree over here, in fact, there are many others scattered across the ravine, floodwaters on the highlands and on the plains sweep them up along with some of the trees that grow at the mouth of the canyon in spring and dump them over here. It's a bizarre scene here. It's very dangerous to come here in the spring season because floodwaters are deadly. Ravine exploration is among the most interesting fields in nature traveling. There are many adventurers around the world who are in love with exploring valleys and canyons. But this field of sport comes with its own hidden dangers. The collapse of the walls or falling from the edge of a canyon's walls are among those dangers. But there's another more serious threat to the life of nature travelers, which is seasonal floodwaters caused by rainfall. Just take a look at what seasonal rivers have done to these walls. The water can be around 2 meters deep here at the time of a flood and can be fatal. Whenever I travel to a place like this, I study up on its weather and climate before I set out so I won't run into any trouble. So when it's raining, you better not be anywhere near the bottom of any ravine. Although Raga Canyon is very wide and the floodwaters flowing in pose a less serious threat, it is likely for torrential rain to come down in the nearby areas. And that means flash floods at a certain time during a day or night or a whole day. So at a time like that, you better not come here. Most nature travelers take all kinds of precautions prior to their adventure, but most of them don't pay much attention to the climate of the places they travel to. They don't take the weather forecasts very seriously. In 2005, 11 mountaineers from Razvin, with all their equipment and years of experience, entered Andres Canyon in Alborz province. But because they had ignored the weather forecast and the predicted rain, they had an accident. During rainfalls, valleys and canyons that offer no escapes are the most dangerous places in the natural world to be. In that year, heavy rain set off floodwaters in Andres Canyon, and unfortunately took the lives of all 11 mountaineers. Therefore, the most important thing that natural explorers should take into account is the weather forecast, the difficulty of the route they're traveling on, and their mental and physical strength for the trip ahead. You can't put a price tag on the environment. All those who walk into nature speak of it as a cathartic experience and absorb massive amounts of positive energy. In my opinion, because the natural world is a manifestation of the greatness and beauty of God, I have walked a very long distance. I'm about to arrive at the end of the canyon. I'm going to have to get out of it before dark sets in, concluding another leg of my trip. It's very easy to pollute your environment, but that's not right. It only goes to show how irresponsible we humans can be. We have to take responsibility for the environment in our country and in the entire planet. We mustn't dump our garbage out in the open and instead send it to the recycling system. We must treat nature the same way we do our homes. Only then can we say we are committed to other humans, to the planet Earth, and to future generations. I'm approaching the end of my trip. I have no doubt that many of my countrymen and women are not familiar with the beautiful natural wonders of Kerman province. And many of the officials in the province don't seem to be aware of the great potential these natural wonders have as tourist destinations. In addition to its old history and culture, the province boasts unique natural features on a par with their counterparts in the rest of the world. In the developed world, development doesn't include building roads, hotels, and tourism centers in the heart of the environment. In the century we live in, development and progress is tantamount to the unconditional and responsible preservation of the environment, and sustainable development of the tourism industry can easily set in motion the big wheels of the country's economy. The environment in Iran is very fragile and sensitive, but with proper professional preservation and protection, by people and officials alike, it can turn into a big generator of jobs and revenues, provided that we appreciate what we have and do all we can to preserve what's left of Iran's untapped natural world. We should perish the thought of construction on it.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that Iran's deserts, with their varied and dramatic landscapes of canyons, yardangs, and their beautiful flora and fauna, are a unique destination for the demanding traveler to discover a wealth of exceptional and unspoiled views. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and other life forms. You're listening to Youth Station. I'm Zainab.
I'm Hassanain. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam, bro. How you doing?
I'm good.
I wonder how many people got that reference. Did you get that reference?
Yeah.
How you doing? I was thinking to myself that this summer heat will be the end of me. I might just die. Like, if I don't come into the studio next week and you thought to yourself, huh, where's Zainab? Mm. And then someone said, she's dead.
Allah,
it was because of this heat.
Allahu Akbar. Did you write your wasiyat name already?
Oh, yeah. There's not much. There's no many details. I don't have much to leave. I mean, there's a few things I'm going to leave for my cat.
Just leave your assets with me.
No. And like a few years of salat and psalm that people have to make up for, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, I can't wait for winter to come, right? So I was already looking ahead, which is what we were doing 2 minutes ago, too. We were looking ahead. We were looking at my will, what happens next week, preparation for the future. And then I was like, oh, I can't wait for winter to come, which will happen in like 3-4 months, roughly. And then I was like, but then winter isn't going to last either. And then the summer heat is going to start all over again. And I got depressed.
Time passes,
I was like, what's the point? I'm just going to die.
Right.
And I thought to myself, how often do we do this? We ruin the now with all the anxiety and stress and uncertainty we create for ourselves regarding the future.
So that's why we say that. Live the moment.
But the moment sucks. It's hot. I might die. Like this moment, I'm good, right?
Yeah.
In the studio, the weather is nice. I've got a nice co-host.
Thank you.
The producer. I love the topic we're talking about.
Yeah.
But in general, what if the moment sucks?
Like, don't spoil your moment thinking for the future. And don't spoil your future thinking about the moment. I don't know. So, like, if you frame it like that.
I lost you. I have no idea what you just said. So, what are you saying?
So, I was saying that, you don't spoil your future. Like, I mean, you don't spoil your present thinking about the future, right?
Or the past.
Like, similarly, don't spoil your future thinking about your present.
What?
You said your moment sucks. Like, it's not good.
Yeah.
So, don't think that it's going to be the same way.
In that way. Oh, my God. That's genius. See, that's why we're co-hosts.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, don't spoil your future. Like, think that your future is going to be same as your
like
present.
This moment. Oh, my God. Yeah. That is so good. That is so good.
Thank you.
I'm going to put that as my, like, Instagram story.
Yeah.
A wise man
don't
once
to tag
told
me.
But, yeah, you're right. There's actually a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam. His Eminence says, don't ruin your now thinking about the past or the future, because the past is... It already happened. You can't do nothing to change it.
Mm.
And the future is not promised.
Okay, let's just like a few points about like winning now, thinking about past.
Just Amir al-Mu'mineen was the king of planning ahead.
Right.
So I'm thinking that he might mean that there should be a balance of a sort.
Right. You shouldn't always be worrying about the future, but it should be there somewhere in your mind. Like, it shouldn't be like you completely leave it.
How much? How much is like...
Balancing, like...
Define balancing. Are you the kind of person who thinks ahead a lot?
Depends. Like, you know, I've seen people, like, think about, what are we going to eat tomorrow? What are we going to eat day after tomorrow? Like, it depends. Like, what are we thinking about?
Mm.
Like, if it's food, I've seen people worrying about food. So Allah is Razak. I'll get the food. I don't need to think about the food. Like... Different aspects, like, you know, different circumstances. It depends, like, if I worry about it or not. Like, me personally, I'm the type of person, like, tawakkul ala Allah. Like, whatsoever happens, by the will of Allah, You know, you just put your trust in Allah.
Exactly. Whether I plan it or not, it's just going to happen the way Allah wants it to happen.
Yeah. Like, what we're supposed to do is, when we know that Allah, قَادِرَ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ, like,
He's capable over all things.
Yeah. So what we need to do is, like, if we leave all our affairs on Him, so it'll happen the way He wants to be. Mm-hmm. And there's one hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, that your affairs are completely attached to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
And His will.
So even the best of your plans might not work sometime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This past year and a half,
yeah,
from the beginning of 2020 till like halfway through 2021, it's been like the CEO of me planning stuff. It's been like the epitome, the prime peak of me planning stuff and then things not going according to my plan. And there's, again, a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen where our Lord and Imam says, I knew Allah, I recognized Allah from how plans break.
How my plans did not work.
Exactly, don't work out. Yeah. And how they break, they just fall apart.
Right.
And that's how I realized there's a stronger, higher power above me.
Right.
I could be planning stuff all day long. From now till morning, I could be planning. Because that's how I used to be, right?
Right. So what's the benefit of you planning for the future and you're not keeping your... heedless of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah. If Allah has no place in your equation, then...
Right.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't plan ahead, because again, our hadith tell us that rahmallah a person, may Allah have mercy on the person who thinks about the outcome of their actions.
For the whole life, like Imam Ali alayhi salam has given us a formula.
Yeah.
So Imam Ali says that, like, live for your life as if you live forever. Or like, work for your life.
Mm-mm.
Work for your life as if you live forever. And work for your afterlife
as if you're going to die tomorrow. All right. We're going to be back after a short message, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Anyway, this is Youth Station. Y'all are listening to us, me, Zainab, Brother Hassanain in the studio. We're talking about, we ruin the now with all the anxiety and stress and uncertainty we create for ourselves regarding the future.
Imam Ali alayhi salam has given us a formula. Work for your life as if you live forever, and work for your afterlife
as if you're going to die tomorrow.
So if we keep this in our mind, like, you know, our life is set, our akhirah is set. You know, like in life, you know, you work and you earn. So as if you live forever, right? But you have your akhirah in your mind.
Mm.
Like one day,
you have
to go in the court of your Lord and you have to give all your hisab kitab and you have to present everything.
Mm.
That's how you're supposed to live, right? So you need to balance like deen and dunya.
Yeah, exactly. It all comes down to balance. Right. Now, I know a lot of people who are all about, you know, taking it one day at a time, right? And I understand that and I respect that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a really long time to be able to develop that sense of presence,
right,
you know, that mindfulness in the now, right? Because I would have plan A, plan B, plan C, all the way to plan Z, and then I'd run out of English alphabets, and I'd have plan Elif, Ba, Ta, all the way till plan Hamza, and then I would, like, learn a different language so I could have plans based on that language's alphabet as well. That's how much I would plan ahead, because I wanted to be in control. Because otherwise, I would feel a sense of anxiety, a sense of impending doom.
Do you think that having plans, having future plans, is different from worrying about future?
That's it. That's what I'm trying to say, right? Because I was so afraid of things being uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
I was so afraid of not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring.
Yeah.
But then I realized my fear is rooted in the fact that I have so little trust in Allah.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
If I trust in Allah, He's gotten me thus far, He will get me farther than here too. He'll get me through tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. Just trust in Him. You know, the thought of looking into the future and not having any image created in my mind scared me. It legit scared me. I felt empty. I felt meaningless. I felt stranded. And I would get riddled with anxiety and stress about what tomorrow holds. Yeah. But now I feel like surprised me.
So it's also really important to have plans.
Definitely. You know,
to have aims. Rather, I would say like this.
Goals, yeah.
You should have aims and you should have goals. So, you know, aimless people, like they're just like wanderers. Like they don't have any goal. They don't have any destination.
Yeah.
So you should have plans, but tawakkal ala Allah. You know, you should know that.
God about it.
If Allah wants it to happen, it'll surely happen. If Allah doesn't want it to happen, it'll never happen.
Definitely. So I guess like the best we can do for our future and this moment is to do our best now.
Yeah.
And then rely on Allah for then.
That's right.
This moment, just do your best.
Okay, the question I asked you, like having future plans, like is it different from like worrying about the future?
Worrying about the future.
Like, let me give you an example. Like having future plans, okay, tomorrow I'll go like so-and-so place. I'll work there and I'll get my income. And I'll eat food and I'll serve my family. Okay, this is like
basic.
A plan for tomorrow, a basic plan for tomorrow. Like worrying about future.
Oh, what if that doesn't happen?
What if that doesn't happen?
Yeah.
What if I cannot work there? What if they kick me out? Like something.
Something that keeps you up at night, I think, would be worried. But something that gets you motivated to do better is like positive planning. And that's what we need.
So what we can do is, like the first thing we said, like having a future plan and relying upon Allah.
Exactly. Because we see a lot of youth that seem to be living these youth years of their lives aimlessly because they don't have any plans. Like if an adult comes and asks them, an older uncle, or like asks them, what are your plans for the future? They're like, nothing. And you know, their life becomes sort of like aimless. They drift. And mind you, a person who says nothing, I just want to see the world, that's already a plan.
All right.
Their plan is to go out there, adventure and explore and build character. That traveling the world and experiencing so many things really does do a lot for character building. That is already a plan.
Right.
But like if a youth straight up says, I don't have any plans. It means that I am not going to do anything now to build a future for myself. That's what I don't have plans means.
Okay, so like giving reference to our previous show where we were talking about, you know, society imposing their thoughts upon the people.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the facts over here that some people cannot have their plans. You know, someone wants to become a doctor, someone wants to be an artist.
Or sometimes one doesn't want to be a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. It's like society imposing, oh, you should be a doctor. That guy wants to be an athlete. He wants to play football. He wants to play basketball. But, you know, it's the society pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
That he cannot do the thing he's good at. So this way, doesn't matter if he has any future plans or not.
Yeah, exactly. It sucks when we live in a society that doesn't support the things we're passionate for, the things that we aim for.
Right. The talent people have.
And if we were to wrap this discussion up, that's basically what it is. Live in the moment.
Like, live the moment and have your future plans and rely upon Allah.
Exactly. Do your best in the moment for a better future that Allah will create for you.
Right.
Yeah. That's all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you so very much for being with us. I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My Alpha and Omega, my protector and my because of you, in weakness I am.
abiding in silence with patience and guidance. However, when I need you, the light, when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love.
In the limelight.
Studies find that overall risk of death or severe disease from COVID-19 is very low in kids, says Heidi Ledford, researcher, in an article published under the heading "Death from COVID: Incredibly Rare Among Children." Stay tuned for more. Studies find that overall risk of death or severe disease from COVID-19 is very low in kids. A comprehensive analysis of hospital admissions and reported deaths across England suggests that COVID-19 carries a lower risk of dying or requiring intensive care among children and young people than was previously thought. In a series of preprints published on MedRxiv123, a team of researchers picked through all hospital admissions and deaths reported for people younger than 18 in England. The studies found that COVID-19 caused 25 deaths in that age group between March 2020 and February 2021. About half of those deaths were in individuals with an underlying complex disability with high healthcare needs, such as tube feeding or assistance with breathing. The studies did not evaluate rates of less severe illness or debilitating long COVID symptoms that can linger months after the acute phase of the infection has passed. The low rate of severe acute disease is important news, but this does not have to mean that COVID does not matter to children, says pediatrician Daniello Bonsenso at the Gemelli University Hospital in Rome. Please let's keep attention as much as is feasible on immunization. In one of the preprints, the researchers trawled for published accounts of COVID-19 among children and young people and ultimately analyzed data from 57 studies and 19 countries. They then picked apart risk factors for severe diseases and death from the data. Some conditions, including obesity and cardiac or neurological conditions, were associated with a higher risk of death or intensive care treatment, the researchers found. But the absolute increase in risk was very small. Study author Rachel Harwood, a pediatric surgical registrar at Alder Hey Children's Hospital in Liverpool, UK, told reporters at a media briefing. For the other two preprints, the researchers focused on England, drawing on nationwide healthcare data on intensive care admissions and deaths among those under 18 years old. The team found that of 6,338 hospital admissions for COVID-19, 259 children and young people require treatment in pediatric intensive care units. Black children were more likely than their white counterparts to require intensive care, both for COVID-19 and for pediatric multisystem inflammatory syndrome, a rare syndrome associated with coronavirus infection. But overall, the need for intensive care was incredibly rare among these patients, says the study author Joseph Ward of the University College London Great Ormond Street Institute of Child Health. Of 3,105 deaths from all causes among the 12 million or so people under 18 in England between March 2020 and February 2021, 25 were attributable to COVID-19, a rate of about 2 for every million people in this age range. None had asthma or type 1 diabetes, the authors note, and about half had conditions that put them at a higher risk than healthy children of dying from any cause. Taken together, the unusually comprehensive studies could provide some comfort to parents who have been shielding children who they thought might be vulnerable to severe complications from COVID-19. There is a general feeling among pediatricians that probably too many children were shielded during the first wave of the pandemic. Russell Weiner, who studies adolescent health at the University of College London, told reporters. In some cases, those efforts might have done more harm than good, added Elizabeth Whittaker, an infectious disease specialist at Imperial College London. Shields are very leaky, she said. The shields have not been perfect and have probably caused more stress and anxiety for families than benefit. The work does not tackle the specter of long COVID, but other studies suggest that it does occur in children, including in those who had mild initial symptoms or were asymptomatic, but less frequently than in adults. Despite the very low death and intensive care rates, Bonsenso hopes that the schools will embrace measures such as masks and improved ventilation, and that parents will focus on immunization for either their children where possible or themselves. When adults are immunized, fewer children are infected, he says. We need to do as much as possible to reduce COVID-19 infection in children.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
June 28, 2021, on the occasion of the National Judiciary Week and the martyrdom anniversary of Ayatollah Martyr Beheshti and other personalities. There is so much in the field of production that one cannot understand until one has contacted and heard from the people who are active in the issues of production, such as officials in charge of labor issues and laborers themselves. Communication with these active groups is part of popular presence and public communication, and therefore we must pay attention to it. The first benefit of it is that you can hear from them what the main problems are, and secondly, you can explain things to them. It is often the case that organizations have certain policies, some of which are protested against from the outside. They have no bad intention, but they protest because they do not have enough information. In other words, they do not know the reasoning for this decision. So because they do not know, they protest. All right, you could explain it to them. There are some things that need to be explained and clarified. Well, these statements were about the judiciary. By God's favor, a new chapter will begin in the judiciary's branch. And God willing, the same approach and method that was very good in the time of Mr. Raisi in the past 2+ years will continue with its strength so that there will be even more achievements and more dynamism. A strong blow to those trying to create a boycott of the elections. I would also like to say a few things about the elections. This election was truly magnificent. This election that took place was literally an epic created by the people. Well, efforts were being made. They were writing in cyberspace, they are talking in media in order to deny the greatness of this election, but it is of no use. This effort is in vain. It was a big achievement. The analysts who cast their eyes on the elections understand what happened. Where in the world is it common for all opposing propaganda apparatuses, the active and influential ones, to do their utmost to intimidate people with the purpose of discouraging them from participating in the elections? American and English media, as well as the media in some reactionary and notorious countries, focused all their efforts on our elections. Their own agents, coupled with some treacherous Iranian individuals who are living under the flag of the American and the English, and who feed for them, began to work since long ago in radio, television, and satellite channels, and in cyberspace, not just one and two of them, rather hundreds and thousands of them, in order to push the people away from the elections.
Thank you. around the world with reporters. Accusations of a state-led anti-Palestine crackdown in British schools have been proven true following the release of a case study by Muslim advocacy group CAGE, which details not only the shocking treatment of students who expressed their humanitarian support for Palestine during Israel's recent onslaught, but also that school leaders have received diktats from the government.
These shock findings highlight the extent in which the government seems to be prepared to go in order to stamp out criticism of Israel at every avenue. Even young students are being targeted by the scheme, which appears bent on hampering freedom of speech on this particular issue.
Out of the 47 cases documented, censorship tactics included verbal warnings, suspensions, a student being expelled, and even police intervention and a referral to an anti-terrorism agency. While most of the students' activities involves little more than vocalizing support for Palestine, fundraising, and displaying Palestine flags. CAGE representatives expressed great concern at the toxic influence government watchdogs have in the British education system.
Schools happily endorse and welcome expressions of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. They join in campaigns against Islamophobia, against any sort of racism that exists in society and prejudices, but when it comes to issues of Palestine, it's as though they are blindsided, and they very much become extensions of the policing arm of the state. Schools and school leaders have a duty to foster an environment within their schools that is conducive to civic education and to create students which are active citizens in the future. What schools should not be doing is disciplining students for practicing basic empathy and showing solidarity with oppressed people around the globe.
For adult activists, speaking up for Palestine could see your reputation assassinated. But now, even young, aspiring humanitarians could see their futures dashed simply for speaking out. Robert Carter, London.
Following an easing of restrictions in the EU and UK, coronavirus cases across Western Europe are on a sharp upward curve. The Delta variant, first identified in India and which spreads much more easily, is being blamed.
The world is becoming a village, so people travel, it's hard to contain.
See all the people here? And some people are not that careful, I think, so...
One word for me, go to vaccine.
The vast majority of young adults and children in the EU have not been vaccinated. This is why the virus is moving around so quickly, experts say.
In view of the rapid spread of the highly contagious Delta variant that is raising concerns not only in Europe but also around the globe, it is extremely important to vaccinate, as per national recommendations, as many people in Europe as possible.
Economists say the EU simply cannot afford further lockdowns. Economic forecasts for the 27-nation bloc are positive, but there are a lot of unknowns.
We continue to monitor the situation very closely, and in particular, and obviously, we are monitoring the Delta variant.
The fact that protectionist Donald Trump is no longer in the White House offers some economic hope, senior EU officials are indicating.
In terms of our relationships with the US, we have gone from a winter of discontents to a summer of cooperation.
In several EU nations, including Greece, France and Ireland, young people have staged protests, believing they are being forced by governments to take the jab in order to participate in society. We have been getting some views in Belgium.
I mean, it's good that the protest is there, isn't it?
I feel forced to receive something I don't want to receive.
Be vaccinated or not, so you can't force people to do that.
Health authorities in the EU argue it is important that young people do get vaccinated, claiming they may only develop a mild illness initially with COVID-19, but could ultimately go on to suffer from long COVID, which can have life-changing implications. Campaigners say EU leaders are shooting themselves in the foot by not providing more vaccines to less well-off parts of the world. This could lead to new variants that might be resistant to existing vaccines, they warn. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Thank you.
As angry mobs blocked roads and clashed with the army, the price of the dollar against the Lebanese lira was skyrocketing, hinting a gloomy outlook in the horizon. In an interview Thursday night, Hariri blamed President Aoun for impeding the cabinet formation process and for his resignation.
The group led by the president has decided not to cooperate with Saad Hariri, and all the obstacles that I have faced are because of that group. I did not want to just negotiate while knowing that I cannot form a cabinet, so I resigned because it seemed to me that President Aoun does not want to form a cabinet.
Presidential office slammed Hariri for his comments, declaring that Hariri was, quote, not ready to discuss amendments of any kind, and closed the door on any talks. Experts see that Hariri is now launching an internal conflict, using resistance as a scapegoat.
It was obvious that he's preparing for his election campaign, because later in his interview yesterday night, he launched his election campaign by opening fire on the resistance in Lebanon.
Observers see that talk of electoral campaigns will be the main focus in the post-Hariri resignation era.
The Americans, they haven't reached a point to let the solution take place. They are still using the financial crisis as a blackmailing means to try to blackmail the resistance in Lebanon.
The state of despair on the streets of Beirut is a reflection of the general situation.
Everyone knew there would not be a new cabinet. The country has collapsed. If the prime minister wanted to actually form a cabinet, he would go for real negotiations. The result will be death of the people, no electricity, no water, and no fuel. Lebanon has fallen.
All the people need to protest. The rich and the poor are equal now, and all sects are facing the same crisis.
They all want a piece of cheese for themselves. If they cannot rule right, they should leave. People are helpless. Hunger knows no religion or sect.
With the socioeconomic crisis quickly escalating, many believe the end result will be a probable demise of the entire political system.
French sources described Hariri's move as cynical self-destruction for the political class. Others considered it the start of an electoral campaign. But one thing all sides agree on is that it puts Lebanon in the face of a chaotic period ahead. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Israel has advanced a major settler building project known as E1. Israel's new prime minister, Naftali Bennett, has relaunched the controversial project for the construction of over 3,412 settler units in the occupied West Bank to connect the largest Israeli settlement of Ma'ale Adumim to the West Jerusalem Al-Quds. The project was first pushed forward by former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Palestinians have slammed the move as seriously dangerous.
Now, as Bennett bring it on the table, it is just to show the settlers that he's better than Netanyahu. He's continued the main strategy and the ideology of the settlements in the West Bank. Netanyahu has been freezing or a little bit slowed down the working in the UN, but they are now pushing it forward.